Genesis 27, 3 through 5. Take your bow and a quiver full of arrows and go out into the open country to hunt some wild game for me. Verse 4. Prepare my favorite dish and bring it here for me to eat. Then I will pronounce the blessing. Everyone say the blessing. That belongs to you, my firstborn son, before I die. You know, the full blessing belongs to us. The fullness. Everything God has to offer us belongs to us. Full peace, full joy, full everything. Acceptance. Everything that he has to offer belongs to us. But it takes work. Takes work. There's an illustrative story where it says, I will give you everything that belongs to you, but you got to work. You got to show up. You got to do it. You got to do what it takes. Today, I love preaching with illustrations. Do you guys like illustrations? Do you guys, two of you? Okay. Thank you. Yes. I wanted to preach on the bow and arrow. I know this doesn't really accurately represent a good bow and arrow, but I couldn't find a real one, so I had to borrow Oliver's. Does anyone have a real bow in the church? I should have just known to ask you guys. I want to preach on this. I know there's about 15 components to a bow and arrow, but I want to talk on the five main parts of a bow and arrow. Five main parts. It's the five main points. The first three, can you just mark on your notes? I forgot to add this in. The first three parts of a bow and arrow are our responsibility. So just kind of like do an arrow, my responsibility. And number four and five is God's responsibility. So on your notes, just go ahead and mark that. First three parts of a bow and arrow, it's our responsibility. And the last two is God's responsibility. Well, just going down, starting at the tip of the arrow and going down through the bow. The first part is the arrowhead. Point number one, the arrowhead. I know this is a suction cup, but just pretend it's an arrowhead today. The arrowhead. I did a lot of research on bows and arrows for this because I didn't know anything besides you point the sharp end and then you pull back. That's pretty much what I knew. You just point the pointy end where you want it to go, and that was it. So on all my research through Wikipedia, it says the arrowhead has three main purposes. A, longevity and distance. The arrowhead is what pierces the wind and makes it go the distance. If you put a potato as the arrowhead, it's not going to go more than a foot to 2 feet, right? The sharpness is what pierces the atmosphere to get it to go the distance, right? The arrowhead is responsible for distance. B, it breaks the barrier. Did you know the longbow was invented for one purpose? Bows and arrows have existed a long time, but the longbow, which was long, hence longbow, was meant to simply pierce knights in armor. That's it. The longbow is meant because they were a mobile tank. Bow and arrow just wasn't working, so they invented the longbow to actually pierce the armor. So the arrowhead is responsible for piercing barriers. And the third thing, it does the damage. The sharpness of it doesn't just make it go long in the air, but it pierces the barrier. It pierces the skin. It pierces the armor. It pierces whatever's holding it there. It pierces it, but then it does the damage beyond the barrier. That's the arrowhead. That's its sole purpose. The reason why you have something sharp on the front versus just a stick. If you're just shooting a blunt stick, it'd kind of do one of these things and fall on the ground. The arrowhead makes all the difference. So the arrowhead, I looked up, what does this symbolically represent to us? What takes us farther in life? What can get us beyond barriers? What can get us into doorways that normally we wouldn't be able to get to? And what can change our lives and the lives of others when we're inside past that barrier? What can do damage and what can build up? It's our words. Our words will take us farther than we'll ever be able to go. Our words will be able to get us past barriers. Our words will be able to do damage or encouragement. Right? It's really the only thing that does that. That does all the same things as an arrowhead. Our words. Our words. And strangely enough, do you know how many times our words are referenced in the Bible as arrowheads and sharp utensils and swords? It's littered through the Bible. I only put in four for sake of time. Proverbs 18:21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruits. That's like a backhand compliment. Like, yeah, you'll be good if you encourage people, but if you don't, you're going to reap what you sow. Your tongue is like the arrowhead. Isaiah 49:2. He made my mouth like a sharpened sword. In the shadow of his hand he hid me. He made me into a polished arrow and concealed me in his quiver. Psalm 64:3. Who have sharpened their tongue like a sword, they aimed bitter speech as their arrow. It really paints a better picture now that we're looking at words like an arrowhead. Jeremiah 9:8. Their tongue is a deadly arrow. It speaks deceit. With his mouth, one speaks peace to his neighbor, but inwardly he sets an ambush for him. Your words. You know, choice is yours. Your words, you can use them for good or bad. I just like that imagery. Your words will take you farther than anything else. Your words. You say something smart or dumb, it'll take you far or short with that person. Places that you normally wouldn't be able to go, words can unlock doors. I wanted to meet with this one gentleman, and he's really up there in Foursquare, and I had always looked up to him as a role model. And one word from a friend of mine unlocked that door so I could meet with him. One word unlocks doors. And then once you go beyond it, your words will either do damage or not damage. You can build up, you can destroy. It's really your choice. Joel Osteen says, if we're going to bring out the best in people, we too need to sow seeds of encouragement. It's all about words. Joyce Meyer, instead of being critical of people in authority over you and envious of their position, be happy you're not responsible for everything they have to do. Instead of piling on complaints, thank them for what they do. Overwhelm them with encouragement and appreciation. Words. Words. I want you to imagine that. We're going to keep going through the rest of the bow and arrow, but the first aspect, the thing that is the longevity, the destroyer, the thing that goes beyond barriers is words. That's the first part of the arrow. Just going down the body, the second point today is just the body. The body. The body of the arrow. So, in looking up and researching the body, did you know everything they sum up is about strength in the body? Body of the arrow. Everything that they talk about is about strength. It's really kind of interesting. Strength. It's what holds the arrowhead and the feathers all together. Do you know every single arrow is ranked on what strength it is? It's 30 pound, 40 pound, 50 pound, 60 pound. How much weight it can withstand and carry. They're all ranked. Its strength determines how far it can go. Its strength determines what bow it can actually fit inside of. Do you know, if I put this arrow in a different bow, let's say I get one of those longbows and I put it in, it's really not going to, you already know it's not going to work, right? I mean, you might even think this might not work very well, but I trust you, I can shoot this across the distance of our living room and make a stick on the window after several tries. It can be done. I'm not going to shoot that window, John. He's like, shoot it. The strength of the arrow determines how big the bow it can fit inside of. They can't be unequally put together. Strength. If you look at the body of an arrow and you look at it, it's just the strength. Do you know if it's put in too strong of a bow, it's called an archer's paradox. So if it's too weak for too strong of a bow, what happens is when you pull it back, the right when you release it, the arrow goes whoop, and then it shoots off in the direction it's pointed. It can't hit the target. You have to severely try and guess and compensate. And even then, at best, you might be able to shoot in the general direction. Or if you have too weak of a bow and too strong of an arrow, it doesn't match. And so when you shoot it, it kind of does one of these things. So it's either going to go whoop or like that. They have to be matched up just right. The strength. So I looked up the definition of strength. Pray for this. The definition of strength is this: the emotional, mental, or physical qualities necessary in dealing with situations or events that are distressing or difficult. Strength. A lot of times we think of, like, you know, Andy. Super strong. Super strong. You know, we think of that as strength. But in reality, it's how you deal with difficulties emotionally, mentally, or physically. The strength of an arrow is how it deals with the recoil of the bow and when it hits the target. That's the strength, the beginning and the end. And if those don't line up, the middle, it's all over the place. Strength. Have you ever felt like that? Like you've been put in a situation that you're not really prepared for, and instead of hitting it perfectly, you kind of do one of these things, and you just feel awkward inside. It's like, that was horrible. Just me? Okay. Strength. I was at, this is my golf club set. I was playing golf in a tournament when I was younger. I played golf a lot as a kid, and this is still my same set, so I haven't upgraded since then. But I remember I was playing in a tournament, and it was me and this other kid, and it kind of bracketed down, and it was just us, and we're going head-to-head. And in tournaments at a younger age, they have to have a impartial judge. Basically a babysitter that follows you everywhere, make sure you're not cheating, make sure you're not dropping the ball, make sure everything's kosher, okay? You keep your score, they keep their score, and then the judge keeps both scores. And so they're like, oh, we're off a little bit, and they take the judge's scorecard. So anyways, we're playing, and the judge was a golf, not like a pro level, but he had done some stuff. And so anyways, we're golfing, and I'm watching this kid who I'm going against, and I'm like, this guy's swing is weird. Like, have you ever seen a weird swing? Like, someone just swings weird, and you're like, I kind of want to try it, but I don't want to throw off my golf game for the day. And so I'm just watching, and we hit there's 18 holes, and we hit the ninth, and we're going around, and then the golf pro talks to me. He's like, hey, why are you swinging like that? And I was like, I've been thinking about that this whole day, but I'm not going to say anything because I'm his competitor, so if he wants to swing like that, that's on him. And so we're going, and he's like, yeah, I have to swing like this or else the ball doesn't go where I want it to go. If I swing normal, can we fix my, it's acting weird, I think it's the mids. If I swing normally, the ball's going to just hook right. And so the golf pro is like, well, let me see, what's your favorite golf club? Most people say, oh, my favorite's a 7, my favorite's a 5, and that's what they golf with a lot. So he's like, oh, it's a 7. So he picks it up and he swings and he's like, let me see your club. And so he's looking at it. He does like one of these things, right? And he's like, hey, your golf club, is this the one you always practice with at the range? And he's like, yeah, I shoot thousands of golf balls with this one. And he's like, do you know it? It's bent a little bit. And I was like, he has a bent golf club in the middle of a tournament? Man. And I was like, I'm glad I'm not this kid. Like, I'm swinging away. And so he looks at it and he goes, all right, here's the deal. I also work in the pro shop. I can straighten this out. But unfortunately, if I fix this right now for you, your golf swing is going to be off for the club. You're gonna be overcompensating. When you swing, right now you're overcompensating to fix the hook that lies within the tool that you have. But if I fix it, you're gonna start hitting them like this every time. So why don't we hit at 18 when we finish up the tournament? I can straighten this out for you. I have some tools, I'll fix it. And he goes, here's the issue. You're used to swinging with something that's broken. You're overcompensating with a broken tool. So he said, I'll fix it, make it perfect, but you're gonna have to take the time and invest it to rework your entire swing and lifestyle based on the perfect club. And so I was preparing this message and that story just popped up in my head. I just remembered it. This little golf tournament in Oregon at Eaglecrest. And it made me think about this. When we have broken aspects of our lives, emotions, how we react to situations, all of the above, when we're made perfect by the blood of the Lamb, if we don't compensate and rework out our perfectness of how God has made us, we miss it. We miss it. We miss it. And so we have what used to be broken in our lives is now made perfect. But if we keep trying to react the same way we used to react, it's not going to go straight. It's not going to be set in anymore. Does that make sense? We're reacting saved how we used to react when we were unsaved. And a lot of times that does more damage than good. And in the whole arrow analogy, if you look at it, it said if an arrow is bent, it will never shoot straight. It'll be off even a hair. If it's bent just a little bit, you can overcompensate to try to make it hit the target, but it won't fly perfect. It's impossible. You can make it compensate to hit where you want to hit, but it's not flying at its full efficiency. It can't go the full distance. It can't go the fullness of what it was created to be. You're made perfect by God, by the blood of the Lamb. He's resurrected and he's resurrected me. I can't wait for that song at the end of service. But if we're still trying to overcompensate for something that isn't there anymore, we're not reaching our full potential. Strength. Strength. To reach the target accurately, it is your responsibility to grow in strength. It's our responsibility. To go the distance, it's our responsibility to work on our words. But to hit it accurately, it's our responsibility to grow in strength. It's on our shoulders. Remember the first verse? There's work to be done. There's work to be done with our words. There's work to be done with our strength. Isaiah 40:31 says, those who hope in the Lord, everyone say hope. That's a wake-up check. Everyone say hope one more time. Hope in the Lord. Well, thanks, Joe. In the Lord will renew their strength. Those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. When you feel weak, find hope. When you want to give up, find hope. When you feel like everything in life is just missing the target, find hope. I think hope can be one of those like Christianese words that just doesn't make sense. Like, okay, I'll do that, Pastor. I'll find hope. Like, you know, you're trying to grasp at something that's untangible. It doesn't make quite enough sense. Like if someone's advice to you would be go to the dollar store and buy 5 pencils. You're like, got it. I go to the dollar store and buy 5 pencils. But when a pastor says find hope, it's like, okay. Literally, hope is this. Hope is believing in something that seems impossible. Hope is believing in healing when everyone else says it's over. Hope is believing in a promotion even when the boss doesn't like you. It's hope. Hope is when everything else seems dim and dark, saying, no, I know it's going to happen. I don't care what everyone else says. I believe it. And it's telling people that. It's standing firm. It's standing to convictions. It's not over. I don't believe it's going to be over. That's hope. It's not faking it till you make it. It's genuinely believing it's going to happen. That's what hope is. Hope. When you feel weak, when you feel like you're not connected, when you feel like when you're shooting towards a target and you feel like you just keep missing it, that's an indicator that you need to grow in hope. Does that make sense? No? Okay. Hope. Number 3. This arrow doesn't have it. But if you ever watched like the old cartoon of Robin Hood, you know that on the back of an arrow there's feathers. Right? Have you ever seen there's feathers or you shot one at a camp or something? Feathers. It's the third main aspect of an arrow. I know there's like, you can go off on 50 other things that belong to an arrow, but I really just want to focus on 3 aspects of an arrow. The last one, number 3, the feathers. The feathers. This is the stability and accuracy. Stability. Stability. It's what keeps the arrow stable from bow to target. Do you know when there's a very direct tie-in between handguns, rifles, and bows and arrows? I'm not going to say every because I could be wrong, but most guns have spirals inside the barrels to curve the bullet so that when it comes out, it's spinning and it spirals all the way to the target. They found that when a gun shoots a bullet out, if it has a spiral, it's able to go the distance with stability. Same reason why a golf ball spins in the air. It has stability. They have certain cores and inners that make a golf ball spin certain ways in the air to have a certain arc to cut through the air just right. And from my research, it showed that it all started with bows and arrows. It's how you put the feathers on. When you loose it, how you have the feathers, they would lick the feathers on the end to have just a 1 degree angle. So when you let it go, it would spin in the air. So no matter what gust of wind it would hit, it would just fly through it. Had stability with it. It caused a foundation for the arrow to fly perfectly through the air and to hit the target with as much force as possible. They're in a certain war. What war is it with a giant long rifle gun? Is it a Revolutionary War? With a huge, like the huge muskets. Do you know they were like 3, 4 feet, 5 feet, the giant ones? And they had a ball in it and you put the powder in and you shoot it. Those had less accuracy than a short barrel with just the lines put in to make the bullet spin. They had to keep adding on barrel lengths because they didn't know how to have the bullet spin yet. So they started copying this and said, what if we spin it like an arrow? And all of a sudden they notice, I don't need this long barrel. A barrel this long that spins a bullet had the same accuracy of 5 feet of barrel. It's crazy. It's crazy. There's stability when it sins. So the feathers, the third thing that we have to work on, it's our responsibility, is our mind. To be accurate and stable in this life, you need your mind. You need to live by wisdom in your life. James 1, chapter 1, verse 5 through 8 says this. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For let not the man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. When you lack wisdom, you're double-minded. It means that whenever wind or waves, it illustrates, comes at, you aren't able to stand up to it. See, with feathers that represent wisdom, you're able to pierce anything in the air to have full impact on that target, the fullness of it. Michael Jordan said, if you're trying to achieve, there will be roadblocks. I've had them. Everybody has them. But obstacles don't have to stop you. If you run into a wall, don't turn around and give up. Figure out how to climb it, go through it, or work around it. Doug Larson said, wisdom is the reward you get for a lifetime of listening when you would rather have preferred to talk. This is like my favorite quote of the day, right here. Ready? A wise man learns by the experience of others. An ordinary man learns from his own experience. But a fool learns by nobody's experience. And it was quoted from source unknown. So either that's someone's name or it's, no one knows. I'm just kidding. Patty got it. All right. So the first three, our responsibility. Number four, the bow. So you have the arrow, you have the arrowhead, the body, and the feathers, and then this is so silly. Then you have the bow. I'm not going to break down the bow into a bunch of parts. I'm just going to have one part be the bow. In looking up the bow, everyone say kesheth. Kesheth. This is the Hebrew word for bow. Kesheth. Kesheth. Kind of sounds like you're swearing in Hebrew right now, but kesheth. Kesheth. Oh, thank you. Consume tight. Do you know, in the Old Testament, there are a lot of times when you see prophets take a bow into battle. There's a lot of times when you hear a prophet say, tap your bow three times. There's a lot of times that you hear someone say, and my bow and my arrows will go into this battle. Well, why not mention all the swords and shields and knives? Like, why not mention everything else? Why the bow? Do you know kesheth? One word, it means bow, but actually it's more wrapped up into promise. You know, this is my favorite part in looking at the research and looking at every time it appears in the Old Testament. There's one time it appears that I was kind of shocked by. I was like, just taken aback, completely stunned that this was mentioned, kesheth. God says, and I will take kesheth and hold it above you, so that every time you see it, you'll know that I will no longer destroy the earth. So where do we get rainbow from? There's no other accents, there's no other words, it's kesheth, bow. I think it blows my mind that God said, I will take my bow that represents promise and hang it in the sky. It's the same word that when Someone says, I will take my bow to battle because you have already given me this victory. It's a word for promise. Really brings about new meaning every time you see a rainbow. Because I, for my entire life, I've always associated rainbows as one thing and bows and arrows, and I never associated them together, ever. But then you find out that God uses it as the same word with the same meaning. Kesheth. Kesheth. Bringing back the bow with the arrow. This is where it all starts to piece together with today's message. I love these parts. You have our responsibility, our words, our strength, our stability that we work on. Those are our jobs. And it fits within his promise for us. Fits within the promise. And through the research, I kept thinking about Archer's paradox. Remember when I said, if the bow is a different weight than the arrow, they don't fly right? It doesn't work together. The bow has to match the arrow. And I love it because God's responsibility is matching the promise over our life to who we are precisely. He doesn't give us something that we can't handle. And he doesn't give us something so weak that we're above it. He matches his promise precisely to us. But it's our responsibility to hit the target that he aims us at. I think there's hope there. Hope. Genesis 9:13. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. You work on hitting the target that you're launched at. The bow gives hope. Number 5, the hand. The last aspect. So you have the arrow, you have the words with the strength, with the stability, partnered with the promise, but what use is it sitting there? I've never heard of a bow effectively killing a Bambi sitting down on the ground, right? It has to be activated by the hands. This is useless without the hand. And I don't know if I'm going to offend on this. You are useless without the hand of God. I am useless. There's a promise over my life, but it is useless without the hand of God over that promise and over my life. I am connected to the promise, but unless the hand of God intervenes, it just sits there. It's nothing. And I love this. Do you know it's not the responsibility of the arrow to choose the target? As much as we want to say, I want to go after that, I need to destroy that, that's not our choice. And it's not even the promise's choice, because the promise is chosen based on the arrow. The bow is chosen based on the arrow. It's the decision, choice, and activation of the hands. The hands. The hands determine the direction, the timing, and the target. I really hope that if you're frustrated in life with wherever you're at right now, you just get this. Just get this. The hands determine the direction, the timing, and the target. That's it. That's what the hands determine. There are times we want to jump the gun and say, I need to go after this. I need this healing in my life, and I need this disease broken over my life. Well, unfortunately, you don't choose the timing. The hands have to wait for a specific timing, a specific direction, and a specific target. Your responsibility isn't choosing the target. Your responsibility is making sure that once you are released at the target, you hit it effectively. Because if your hope isn't strengthening you, you won't miss where you're headed. If you don't have the stability of a mind to guide you there, you won't be able to reach it. Without the sharpness of your words, you won't be able to cut through any barrier that comes in front of you. The hand of God represents God's will, who he is. Zechariah 9:14 says, "And the Lord shall be seen over them, and his arrow shall go forth as the lightning." I love these Old Testament imagery just because it gives such understanding of who we are and why we're here and what we're doing. He's in control, but we're in control of how we get from here to there. Janelle, can you come on up? I want you to have hope that God is in control. No matter how life feels at times, God's in control. He's in control. Whatever barrier, whatever blockage, whatever thing is keeping you from receiving all the fullness of the blessing, God's in control. God's in control. Next time, I want to challenge you. Really, next time you're facing something so severe, something that's just bringing anguish up, just have that image of, no. I'm not a punching bag for the enemy. I'm an arrow for the enemy. I don't receive the enemy's blows. God's aiming me to deal the blows. Is that a different mindset? I'm not some weak person that's going to sit back. I'm armed and dangerous. I'm going to go after what God has called me to go after.